You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 102.7 FM.
This February 14th, the annual Women's Memorial March will be held in honor of women from the downtown East Side who have died to varying forms of violence. This will be the 21st year of the march, and there are now similar marches held in cities across the country. This year, the march occurs against the backdrop of the Missing Women's Commission of Inquiry. The inquiry was supposed to look into the systemic injustices which for years allowed serial killer Robert Picton to prey on vulnerable women in the downtown East Side. That inquiry is being boycotted by many community groups and is widely regarded to be perpetuating the very injustices it claims to be looking into. To talk about some of this, I'm joined on the phone now by Corinthia Kelly. She is one of the organizers for this year's Women's Memorial March. Good morning, Corinthia.
Good morning.
The inquiry is considered a sham by many groups representing women on the downtown East Side, and rather than highlighting the voices of women from the downtown East Side, is generally seen to be further marginalizing them. In what ways is it doing this?
Initially, what happened was that groups were invited to, or community members were invited to come forward and ask to participate in the inquiry. And so many of the groups that that asked for standing in the inquiry were granted full standing, but then were denied funding for legal representation. And so what that meant is that they could come into the inquiry without lawyers, because these groups are dealing with a population that is the poorest of the poor in this country, and most of the women that we're talking about live on $235 a month, apart from their money for shelter. And so these are people who cannot afford lawyers. And the community groups that advocate for these women are from nonprofits that deal with funding cuts. And we try to just be able to give people the bare necessities and are not able to meet those needs. So there's no money for lawyers. So by granting them full standing and denying them funding for legal representation, it was a joke right there. Because there were thousands and thousands of pages of legal documents to go through that required a lawyer to be able to go through them and read them and make submissions and speak to the court. And so the process was a joke from the beginning. It was theater. And without legal representation, there was no possibility of those groups or those women from the community being heard. And then Wally Opal made a recommendation that those groups be granted funding, and he was ignored. And that was the first time, I believe, that that a head of a public inquiry had been ignored. When he made a recommendation like that. And so it was, really revealed kind of how things were going to play out during the course of the inquiry. And so there were teams of lawyers representing the police. The Vancouver City Police and the RCMP were very well represented and funded by that one senior lawyer was being paid $1,500 a day. Eventually, all the women's groups in the downtown East Side came together, formed one group, and were offered two lawyers to represent all of those groups and all of the women that they advocate for. So the decision was made that we would not participate, and we would pull out. And rather than be involved in the public inquiry process, we would be outside of the public inquiry, trying to draw attention to the systemic injustices that have created a country an environment where Aboriginal women are easy prey for predators.
And so what kinds of issues do you think an inquiry should be addressing?
Well, it looks like this inquiry is primarily like a finger-pointing between the Vancouver police and the RCMP. So it looks like they're looking for someone to blame and within the ranks of the police. And while, you know, people in the community have for years and years and years, like for, you know, the Memorial March has been going on for 21 years, longer than that, women have been going missing from the downtown east side, and with little being done to investigate them, family members have been ignored and terribly treated when they went in to ask for police to investigate their missing relatives. That went on for so many years. And actually, across the country, this is the same thing goes on. You know, the Walk for Justice just came back this year from their fourth walk across the country, visiting communities all across the country. And when they went to communities, people would come out with photographs of loved ones that are missing, and they ended up with stacks of photographs of missing Aboriginal people from little communities across the country, whose disappearances are not properly investigated or followed up on. So something's going on across the country, and that's what we know what it is. The community members know what it is. It is that Aboriginal people are human rights are not respected in this country, and the conditions on the reserves are deplorable. Communities across the country don't have there's signs up in communities: you cannot drink the water because it's contaminated. The housing is inadequate. The poverty is shocking. Third world conditions exist in this country on reserves in a climate that is very harsh. And so what happens is people come to the cities looking for a better life and then encounter conditions like the downtown east side. And children are removed from Aboriginal families in a way that does not happen with white people's families. Middle-class families don't have their children removed that way. And the children are put into the care of the ministry, released from care when they are 19 years old, and end up in shelters and on the street downtown, having to support themselves through survival sex trade or, scrambling to have their basic needs met, and they become prey to predators like Robert Picton. And it's not just characters like Robert Picton. You know, during the time when the inquiry was just beginning, I work in the downtown east side with women, and who are many of them survivors of the Picton farm. And during the time that I was that the inquiry was beginning, there was a woman who was a mother. She was picked up down and taken down to the industrial park and threatened that she was going to be killed. She was beaten so badly that she had to have she's had jaw surgery two times, and she's still dealing with that, the after effects of that beating. She was beaten by four, beaten and raped by four young, wealthy kids from the North Shore who picked her up, and she escaped. That's why she's alive. And so this is going on regularly. And it's not just going on in the downtown east side, it's going on across the country. And so what we wanted to draw attention to, we hope that the public inquiry would take a look at the conditions in this country that that have contributed to these kinds of attitudes, that the fact that Canada's has a history of wanting to eliminate this population. Aboriginal people were part of a program of genocide by the Canadian government, and so Canada needs to take a look at that. This is something that these attitudes still remain. Canada is not a country that protects human rights of its own Indigenous people. It's a country that was one of the last to sign on to the United Nations Declaration for the Rights of Indigenous People. Canada resisted recognizing those rights, and that's the problem. That's what we hope the public inquiry would take a look at.
I know a number of groups have been involved in trying to get the United Nations to launch an inquiry. Or what's the status of that application now?
The application has been received, and then we're just waiting now for them to follow the process that has to be followed, and we're wondering whether the Canadian government would welcome UN representatives to Canada to conduct that inquiry, because that's what would have to happen. It's the Canadian government would have to be receptive to that inquiry. And we wonder that because what's gone on with this public inquiry into the disappearances and murders of these women has, raised a lot of questions about that. The denial of funding for legal representation for the voices of those women in the community who have the real knowledge about what went wrong, the real knowledge about what was happening during that time, those voices are not being heard. They've been shut out. And supposedly because of budget concerns. The Bazien-Virk inquiry, the Bazien-Virk were cost the BC government $6 million in legal representation, and that was not a problem.
Just wondering if you can talk a little bit about the events happening this week. On Monday, you've got a rally planned, and then of course the march on Tuesday. What can we expect at these two events?
Well, during the course of the public inquiry, for most of the Mondays of the since the inquiry began, we have been there with representatives from the community supporting the families, and also drawing attention to the fact that the community has been shut out. And so this will be a larger group. We're expecting a larger crowd, and there will be drummers and some community leaders will be there speaking and bringing people together to try to speak out about what's going on. So we're hoping for as much support as possible from people from here.
Yeah. Great. Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Good. Thank you for having me.
I've been speaking with Corinthia Kelly, one of the organizers of this year's Women's Memorial March.